It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Yeah, I'm back, baby. Along with Jeff and Gina, we'll talk about Chrome. It's being built into Windows 8. Also, the new Chromebook is here from HP. Apparently, Google had a big hand in that. And the Google changelog, everything new from Google this week, including a new Google Maps. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 219, recorded October 9th, 2013. Support like a pillow. This Week in Google is brought to you by Full Sail University. Full Sail offers both online and campus degree programs centered on real-world experience in the entertainment, media, and technology industries. For more information, visit fullsail.edu/twig. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off on your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code TWIG1013. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/twig. It's time for This Week in Google, the show that covers Google, the cloud, the Googleverse, the world, and anything else we want to talk about, including Chipotle, Glee, and whatever the heck's on our minds. Gina Trapani is here from smarterware.org, founding editor at Lifehacker and the author of Think Up and To Do Text. Hi, Gina.
Hi, so glad to be here. Welcome back, Leo.
Host of All About Android.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to be back. Thank you guys for filling in for me.
Gina's the one who did the yeoman's effort. I finked out last week, so it was all
you
Gina.
Finked?
I think.
Jeff Finky Jarvis.
And somebody on Twitter suggested, Leo, that neither you nor I was welcome back because Gina did such a wonderful job.
Well, and that's the sad fact of the matter is that Gina's too damn good.
Mm-hmm. I was nervous, you guys. I'm really happy you're both here today.
No. I was told to get a shrink by this guy.
You got into a very big battle going on while I was gone between Jeff and some listener. And I wanted to just say, just ignore that. Jeff, I get that every day.
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah, that was but a guy spent a lot of time writing that email.
Yeah. You know, basically, there's an inverse proportion to the intelligence of the email and the length of it. Yes. I found, but
or to the life existing outside the strange world.
Anyway, yeah.
Yay for engaged listeners.
Well, we're glad they're engaged.
Yes, we that's are. We are.
You see, this is why Gina is so good. She found the silver lining.
But I answered back. And it was all about the I'm not going to do it again now.
See, you shouldn't answer because it doesn't.
That's the problem. Because then he said, well, you only answered one line. Now that's it. I've lost you as a fan. I'm gone. You know.
Yeah, I had that the other day. Yeah. I had this. It's just weird. It's just weird. People, I think that here's what I would suggest. And I'm not going to call this guy out by any means. In fact, we appreciate people's feedback.
Yeah, and he cares about the show, and I love that. He just cares about Google Reader a little too much.
Yeah. The thing I've noticed about the internet in general is we assume that everybody out there is like us.
God help the world.
Well, you just assume, hey, I'm having a conversation with somebody. They're rational, normal people. But, you know, the world is full of a broad variety of types, and not everybody is normal.
And everybody has their buttons, you know, like everybody has a button. And sometimes you say something kind of a toss-off joke or a comment or whatever, and it just presses somebody's button. It just hits on something that's sensitive for them at the moment or for whatever reason. And then things get weird. Yeah. But
And maybe he was having a bad day. You know, sometimes you have a bad day. Yeah. His dog died. His wife left him. Train ran over his car, whatever. And he decided to take it out on you. So I just ignored those.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's the same thing when you're in a chat room or a forum or whatever. You just assume everybody's normal. And they're not. They're Looney Tunes out there. They're crazy.
They are.
No, I'm being silly. Hello,
yay,
everybody.
Stranger danger.
Stranger danger. That's Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com. He's also professor of journalism at the City University of New York. I met somebody on the cruise, a young woman who is a writer. She's actually writing for like the New Yorker and the Nation. And I mentioned you, Jeff, and I said, you know, it's good to see somebody succeeding in journalism. Yeah. This is a difficult profession these days. But what's been interesting is she's writing a lot for online now.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that's what you do.
That's exactly what you do.
Of course, there's not as much money in online, but we're going to fix that. Mm-hmm. All right. What do you want to talk about? Did anything happen while I was gone?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing, really.
Nothing. No.
Mm-hmm. There's a new Chromebook, right?
Yes,
yeah.
I thought excited about. They're cool too. These new Chromebooks.
Cool. They really look nice. They look like they're well engineered. The best thing about them, charge with USB.
That is so interesting.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. So this is from HP. We kind of talked. Is this the one we talked
with
about?
Google?
But Google helped them.
So there's a blessing here. The only problem is it has the same tech specs essentially as the old Samsung one, which though right. nice. Was just too slow to handle too many tabs.
It's low end.
It's low end. So, but it's 79. What do you expect?
It charges with a USB micro USB.
Micro.
Yeah. Wow, that is neat.
That is so
it's
smart.
It's the only carbon charger.
Now, I probably charges slowly because there's not a lot of wattage on that sucker. You know, most laptops have 40, 50, 100 watt power supplies. The most you can get out of USB is around 10 watts. And that directly impacts charge time. So I'm not sure what they're doing there on that one. But we'll see. We'll get one and we'll review it. I like the colors, the Google colors.
Yeah, you know, I generally think that this whole color thing is such a gimmick. And I never, you know, whatever. I never think make much of colors. But I really like that the way they did the colors on these. They're accents versus, yes, right. you know, the whole thing. And those bands, those colored bands you're seeing, that's actually the bottom of the machine. So those are like the rubber grips, right?
So they're kind of two-tone, and then it could be yellow and white or green and white or red and white, whatever you like.
Or if you're really boring, yeah. by black.
Yeah.
Right, or just plain black. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got the little rainbow across the top. I love that, like the Pixel has.
Like the Pixel?
Yeah. Now, I wonder if that lights up the same way as the Pixel.
I think you have to pay $1,500 for that.
No. Did you read the article in Business Insider about the birth of the Pixel?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting.
Cesar Sengupta.
So much Chromebooks.
Chromebooks in general. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cesar Sengupta. He said the Chromebook thing started as a 20% project for him. His day job was running Google Toolbar and Google Desktop. But he wanted to do a little bit of hardware. He was actually saying that the issue for him was these crappy slow boot BIOSes.
Amen. It was still checking. I loved it. It was still checking for floppy drives.
Yeah. He said it's 2009. Computers take 5 to 6 minutes to boot. And it, partly because, it's going, is there a floppy? So when he got the fast BIOS to boot in 8 or 9 seconds, it was like, wow.
This is how it should work. Yeah.
Yeah. So they asked at Business Insider, Julie Bort doing this interview, was there a moment when Larry or Sergey saw that and said, let's build PCs? And Cesar said something I thought was kind of interesting. Google doesn't really function with a single executive. It's a very bottoms-up culture. The way it works, people start moving to the project. Once people saw our initial demo, we had engineers going around saying, hey, can we help you? The projects at Google typically get staffed initially like this. At some point, you get to this critical mass, and it gets much easier to get resources. It's a very interesting way of doing things. You have to get the buy-in of your peers before you even can talk to Larry or Sergey about it.
It is, although it suffers the risk that you have a lot of products that are built for people who work at Google.
Yes.
Right.
Right? Like,
which is the Pixel.
Extremely
Let's
smart.
Be honest.
Privileged, overeducated, right. smart right. engineer types. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not a bad thing, but there's an inherent kind of inherent bias there.
He said, I know if a project's successful when I see other Googlers using it. He says, this year is one of those years where suddenly Googlers are starting to carry around Chromebooks. And, of course, that's the Pixel, I'm sure. Yes. He says the Pixel is something that's used by a very large number of Googlers. So he knows we've succeeded. Well, that's not the only metric in the world.
It's not. But selfishly, that gives me hope that they'll do a new version
right.
using the Haswell chip.
Dog fooding it.
Yeah.
I have to say, and I might, this might be a little bit of a retrenching on my part, a little bit of apologizing. Not in general about the Pixel. I still think that's really too expensive. But I do think that Chromebooks, right now, schools are adopting Chromebooks faster
schools
than
schools are going crazy. I watched the Chromebook group on Google Plus, and it's just amazing to see what the educators are doing with them and just the numbers involved, the right. hundreds they're buying.
That's. I think that's good. I think it is, in fact, a perfect school computer.
Yes, much better. You know, we talked on the show some time ago when L.A. got iPads.
$30 million worth of iPads.
There was a story about what a disaster it is, which we predicted.
The kids hacked it within days.
Yeah.
All the security software they build in there to keep kids from doing anything good with their iPads. First thing the kids go is, no, that's not going to go. That's not going to fly. And they hacked it immediately. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the beauty of a Chromebook. I guess you could put. I mean, if you're really good, you could put Linux on it, and make it a full service computer. But really, no, it's a browser.
Yeah,
yeah. Now Google's going the other way. We'd mentioned before I left that Chrome apps on Windows, but they're starting to build Chrome OS right into Windows 8.
I'm trying to get my head around. I don't understand how they're doing this without Microsoft.
Gina, I was so hoping you just explain it for me.
Yeah, I was trying to get my head around what's going on here. This is a Verge story, and they're saying that Chrome traditionally runs on the desktop in Windows 8, but you can this is giving developers the ability to set Chrome to launch within Windows 8 start screen in a special Metro style mode. So,
this is something Microsoft allowed and encouraged. Kind of, remember ActiveX? The idea that you could have internet-based apps.
Right.
That, so this is something Microsoft actually created. It's a Windows 8 special mode for browsers. It lets browsers basically be part of the OS.
Which is kind of incredible on so many different levels. I mean, when you think about... I mean, I think it's great that Windows allowed this and that Microsoft is encouraging this. I'm still trying to understand why, like as a developer. So you're saying you can start Chrome when Windows starts, right? So that users can then click on an icon, a web app icon in the start menu to launch it as if it's a native app.
Native app. So you could, in other words, you can assume that Chrome services are available.
Right.
Now.
Right.
You know, you don't have to do anything. So in addition to the Windows API and all the things you could do in Windows, you could assume a certain number of Chrome services are also available.
Is this going to be turned on for users automatically, or is this like a system level?
Well, they'd have to install
the Chrome OS, the Chrome layer, or whatever. Right, right.
And it may be that if they install one of these Metro Chrome apps, that it says, you know, it brings in a DLL called Chrome. I don't know exactly how it works.
So do you have but then you have web apps within the web app, within the Chrome app.
Yeah, they look, no, you don't see Chrome running. That's what's so weird about it.
Yeah, you don't see Chrome running. Right, they can just be full, they appear to be windows that are just like native app windows. There's so many companies that have just tried this over and over again. I mean, you have like Mac OS X with those widgets, which are web-based, and we've seen widgets on like the Vista and Windows 7 desktops. We've seen Adobe Air. Like that, you know, we've seen so many sort of runtimes that let developers make these, you know, web, you know, these widgets or native-like applications with web technologies. Over and over, we see them, you know, happen, and they never really have caught on so far. I think TweetDeck was the only like Adobe Air app that I used a lot, and actually now it's a Chrome app. I use the Chrome app,
right?
The TweetDeck Chrome app,
right?
But otherwise, they've always just been more of a novelty than something that users have really dug into. Well, at least that's my impression.
It does feel like a Trojan horse, a little bit. But Microsoft's not stupid. They know what they're doing. They know what Google's doing.
Well, Chrome's a big browser. I mean, you know, if you're just too limited and can't use a browser you like in a Microsoft product at some level,
I'm sure this kind of capability is there for Internet Explorer, right? I mean,
It's amazing though, given the market share that Internet Explorer had, you know, back in the day, this is happening right now. I saw this PBS Frontline did like a Steve Jobs thing this week because it, you know, it's the anniversary of his death, and I think it was Walt Mossberg was saying they had interviewed him, and he was saying that he really liked both Steve Jobs and Bill Gates very much as people. They're both kind of difficult to work for. Steve was more fun to be around. Gates was a lot more technical. The one comparison that he made between the two companies is that like Microsoft was always improving things incrementally. They're always making incremental changes, whereas Apple was always taking a very long view and trying to reach like very big, what seemed to be almost impossible goals. And that's what he, you know, really liked about Steve and Apple kind of more than Microsoft. And so, you know, it's interesting. And he said, you know, this is why Microsoft lost their foothold. They completely missed the internet, basically, because they were so busy sort of concentrating on Office, shipping Office, right, which was their big, you know, revenue maker. And so it's just interesting to see Microsoft coming around to this place where they're, you know, bundling Chrome into Metro because this is the browser.
Well, there was another piece, I think, in the Times this week about the guy who's in charge of Microsoft Cloud and being there with the cloud show. And how that's a big cultural change for them is not to push the OS, but to push the idea of working on the cloud. And that's hard for Microsoft, too.
Yeah.
Well, Apple, it's not like Apple's not going to come up against hard times, too. I mean, what's hard is to be a successful tech company and then reinvent yourself every 5 years, as is required these days.
Indeed.
That's just
really
hard.
It was required. It was required for Apple to come back from the dead, right?
Right. Yes. And I don't know. Did you guys read the New York Times Magazine on Sunday, the article about Steve Jobs and the iPhone? Wow. You got to read this. We talked about it on Mac Break Weekly yesterday. It's from a book that Fred Vogelstein, who's at Wired Magazine, is writing right now about Apple, or it's an excerpt from a book. I should give Fred full credit on this. The book name is Dogfight, How Apple and Google Went to War and Started a Revolution. But part of it is about the iPhone, and he interviews Andy Grignon, who was an engineer who was one of the chief designers of the radios in the first iPhone. And he talks about what a hairball it was and how difficult it was to do. And in fact, they talk a lot about the unveiling of the iPhone. This is 2007 of the first iPhone and how it didn't work. There was a magic path that Jobs would have to follow because Jobs wanted to show the browser, show an email, and make a couple of phone calls. And the phone would crash if you tried to do that. So there was a magic path that Jobs had to follow to the letter or it would crash. And time and time again in rehearsals, it crashed. And Jobs is getting more and more angry. He's looking at people and says, "You are effing up my company." But it's a very dramatic story. And in fact, it's very funny because Grignon says, "I brought a bottle of scotch to this demo because we had no idea if this was going to fly." And every time a part of the demo worked, the guy who was responsible for that took a shot. I mean, we're all in the audience here. We didn't see this. This is all going on in the fifth row. And he said, by the end of the demo, it was the best demo I'd ever seen in my life. And in fact, I think everybody agrees, this was Steve Jobs at his finest, this initial iPhone announcement. And he said, we were all wasted. He said the rest of the day was completely written off. But the reason I bring this up is the message I got from this incredible piece, which I highly recommend, is that without some guy like Steve Jobs just kicking ass, cracking the whip, inspiring people, because you can't just do that and because people go, well, screw you, Steve, I'm out of here. But inspiring people, really saying, you got to give me everything. You're gonna lose your family. You're gonna lose your life. I'm gonna have you for the next 5 years, you know, 24/7. But we're gonna change the world, and people did it.
Yeah.
And without a guy like that behind it, it's pretty hard for a tech company to survive. And I think it's even harder for a second act. I mean, Steve had several acts.
But that's also the top-down view. If you go back to what you read about the Chromebook, Google is so goddamn big.
Right.
But there is some level of bottom up. There is some level of people creating Chromebooks or Google News or whatever these things are that can still bubble up there. And I'm sure it's hard, and I'm sure it's gotten too big, and all that's probably true. But there are still inventions from within that aren't controlled just from one person at the top.
Oh, I completely agree. And I think this is I think this is intentional on Larry's part. I think Larry Page knows this. Everybody knows this. It's the innovator's dilemma, knows the challenge that as you get successful and you get big, how hard it is to stay nimble. And I'm sure Larry saw this as a systems problem and said, how can we design a company of 100,000 employees that is innovative as and as exciting as a startup? And what he's done, it seems to me, is create a lot of mini startups within the company. It's kind of like this headless, you know, company. And if you're in charge of a product, it's almost like it's your own company. Which now Microsoft did this and failed. Google has the problem of you get announcements that are in the time frames conflict, and you know, it's like different. We've talked about this before. Different companies. It's like different companies within the same company. Apple had this unitary vision where it's all top down. Microsoft tried to do this thing where you have a bunch of dictators, but each of them is, because of the stack ranking system, this is Dvorak's theory, and I think he's probably right, each of them is fighting for their life. It's like Survivor. You know, you don't want to be kicked off the island, so they're killing each other. They're shooting at each other, you know, saying Office succeeds only if, you know, the iPad apps fail, et cetera, et cetera. And so nobody can succeed. All of this is an attempt to solve the same problem.
You know, and for Apple, that's used to that structure. What is Johnny Ive it or not? I just put something in the chat on the rundown. Have you seen the Johnny Ive Leica?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, so it's like beautiful. Only one's gonna be made, right? And so it's like Senator. You're no senator. Moment.
Huh?
What was the famous debate line? I knew Jack Kennedy.
Oh yeah, Kennedy. You are no Jack Kennedy. Yeah. Yeah. Who was that? God, we're too old.
Yeah, we are.
It was in a presidential debate, or actually it was a vice presidential debate.
Yes.
And anyway, it doesn't matter now. No. Was it Dan Quayle and Lloyd Benson?
How Bingo. About that? Now you cheated, didn't you?
Yeah, I had a little help.
Thank you, chat room.
Lloyd Benson saying, I knew Jack Kennedy. I work with Jack Kennedy. And you, sir, are no Jack Kennedy.
Jack Kennedy.
And he was right. Jack Kennedy could smell tomato. Spell tomato. So Johnny Ive has designed this beautiful Leica camera. There's only going to be one. It's going to be auctioned by Sotheby's on November 23rd to benefit Project Red, Product Red, Bono's charity to fight AIDS in Africa. They expect it to go off at $500,000 to $750,000 for this one camera.
Jesus.
It is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Don't drop it.
So Johnny is brilliant. There's no question Johnny's brilliant. I doubt Johnny is a whipcracker.
Does he have the business genius?
Well, I think Tim Cook does.
Cook has the business genius, yeah.
But the point is, and I keep coming back to this, it's the innovator's dilemma. It's very hard to be a successful tech company and continue on. Microsoft couldn't do it. IBM couldn't do it. It's going to happen to Apple and Google at some point.
So far, Google has, though. That's
but Google's 13 years old?
15.
They said their birthday, didn't they?
That's
not an old company.
It was a search company. It was an ad company. It's now a mobile company. So far, it's had three lives.
So maybe the Larry Page strategy of letting a million flowers bloom is the right way to do it. I don't know.
Well, he doesn't let a million. He lets a million bloom, and then he stomps on 900,000 of them.
Yeah, it's true.
Which is a strategy.
Okay, let's talk about this. Actually, I want to take a break. Then I want to talk about Chromecast, because there's some stomping going on.
Yeah.
It's stomping time. And we're also going to get our changelog, because I've been gone a long time. I don't know what. You have to tell me everything that Google's done in the last 3 weeks.
Okay. All right. We'll play back the last three changelogs.
Knowing Google, they've done a million things. We got a brand new sponsor I want to talk about. Full Sail University. Do you know Full Sail? I think you do, Jeff.
I do. It's a competitor, but a worthy competitor. It's a for-profit university that does a lot of really good practical stuff, like in my field of journalism and media, and offers degrees. And as somebody put out in the chat room before the show, J.D. Harmeyer of the Howard Stern Show is a proud graduate of Full Sail.
There you go.
What that's worth.
So they have a campus. I think it's a Florida campus, but they also have an online campus. You can get master's degrees. You can get bachelor's degrees. They have an online internet marketing master's degree program. So if you want to keep pace with marketing technologies, I mean, like the latest stuff, like social media, search engine optimization, web metrics, stuff that, frankly, a conventional university isn't going to be up on. Full Sail can teach you. Analyzing online consumer behavior. You will be working on real projects with real clients to gain experience, to generate results, and to learn from people, instructors, who really are in the industry and have the real experience. And I love this. This really is kind of the new kind of university, frankly. Full Sail's online and campus degree programs are centered on real-world education, experience with industry, technology, and workflow. You can earn your master's degree in a year, 12 months. They also have something called Project Launch Box. Students receive a MacBook Pro preloaded with Apple's creative software tools, the whole thing, as well as degree-specific sets of pro-level applications. They have classes in video production, audio production. They've Grammy Award winners, Emmy Award winners. They've got an MFA in film production, a mobile gaming master's program. How about that? If you wanted to say, what's the thing I could do that would guarantee me the best shot at making $1 million in technology, learn how to do mobile gaming. That would be the way to do it. So here's the deal. I want you to visit fullsail.edu/twig. We've got a special landing page. I really wanted you to know about Full Sail. I think it's a very interesting program. I know a number of people have gone. In fact, I've talked to Lisa. Lisa really wants to go and get her advanced degree. And I said, look, we'll pay for it. Twit will pay for you, our CEO. And I think this is a great way to have somebody who's still working, who's still part of the company, but enhance their skills to bring to the company. Real-world experience in entertainment, media, and technology. Full Sail, F-U-L-L-S-A-I-L, like a boat. Although they have an airplane as a logo, so I don't know what that means. Full Sail University, fullsail.edu/TWIG. Brand new sponsor. Want to welcome them. And really encourage you, just go and check it out. You know, this is one way that to keep education relevant. It really is interesting.
And I think education needs for-profit competitors.
Yeah, it needs to be, yeah.
We in education are big, fat, sassy, lazy, and stuck in our old ways.
Yeah. Hey, well, if they don't make it, they're out of business, right? They got to perform.
Give students what they need to get jobs in the world.
Yeah.
What's Lisa want to study?
Well, she's already got a business degree. I'm not sure. But I think when you, I think this is really true that, and I know a lot of most companies do this, when you have somebody who's a really valuable part of the company, having them get additional education while they're working is phenomenal. If she's willing to take the time in her downtime to do that.
If only more companies would.
We should pay for that. You know, I think that only benefits us. Full Sail, they even have Academy Awards. 35 graduates worked on 7 different Oscar-winning films from Full Sail. That is pretty impressive. All right, moving on. Let's do it. Let's play the drums. Hey, wait a minute. Before we do, we should give a plug. The guy who did the changelog theme is up to something new, right?
Yeah, so that's Jesse Wiener. He worked on a YouTube video, and he did the score for it. And so if you head on over to bit.ly/boats2013, you can see the video that he worked on, or bit.ly/sailsong.
Let me skip the ad here. Hold on a second.
Yeah, / sail on song.
Boats. So this is like cars and planes?
Yeah, but with boats. So basically, and there's some really famous YouTubers in there. And what's going on is there's a pitch for the new movie, which is Boats. And
oh, that's funny. Oh, this, and he did the music.
Yeah.
I love it.
Nice What's job, the Jesse. Pitch?
They're boats that talk.
Mm-hmm. You're adorable.
Is she adorable? A famous YouTuber?
She is, sir. Now, we don't have a story yet.
I bet you that fat guy's not.
But like, that's looks like me. That's like Kev Jumba over there who'll start causing problems in just a bit. But yeah. So he worked on that. So
cool.
bit.ly/boats2013 to check it out.
bit.ly/boats2013. And now, ladies and gentlemen, another Jesse Wiener production. The Google change log.
That want to be in the water.
No, turn me off.
The Google change log.
Gina Trapani will now catch me up on everything that's happened since I've been gone.
Well, at least everything that's happened since last week.
All right.
Google search results just in time for premiere season. Google search results now tell you when a TV show is airing. So if you do a Google search for, say, The Good Wife TV show, which I highly recommend, great show. Just did a great episode about NSA surveillance last week.
Yes, Steve was talking about that.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, it's TV, so there are parts that are fictionalized and a little eye-rolly, but for the most part, for a CBS show on Sunday night, they do a really good job. A lot of issues that we talk about here on Twig, too. So you Google a TV show name like The Good Wife or Modern Family or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. If it's a show that has a really common term, like I'm hooked on Parenthood, if you just Google Parenthood and you just add TV show to the end of it, in the knowledge graph area there on the right side, you'll get all the episodes that are coming up and their air dates and some things about the cast. And if there's a new episode that's going to come up,
remind me.
Yeah, there's a that's the thing. Remind me
on Google now. Yeah.
So Google now remind you about new episodes on your phone or tablet. This also works for movies. So I can't wait for the next Hunger Games movie to come out. It's in November, counting down the days. You can add just a little reminder to Google now and it'll tell me when the movie will be out. So really cool. Really nice use of
what
the
I'd like.
Really cool to see that reminder link there for Google now that links to Android too. Go ahead, Jeff.
I want to search for Nexus 5 and have it remind me so it lets me know.
Yeah. Remind me to buy a Nexus 5.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. So good stuff there in search results.
I love Google Now. Have we said that lately? Yes, we have.
Yeah, Google Now is awesome.
So
it just keeps getting better.
When I was traveling, I used it all the time. It would say things like, oh, the time at home is, or, hey, you want to go to the Rialto Bridge. It's 5 minutes by boat. I mean, it was brilliant.
It's particularly good when you're traveling. When you're someplace other than home, it'll tell you currency conversion and when you're getting to the airport. It's really great.
It even would say things like, so it's morning in Turkey. And I guess it knows I'm in Turkey. It says, here's how you say good morning in Turkey on my Google Now cards. It's great. It's wild.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You could just be at breakfast and be like, speak for me, Google Now. Say good morning.
You could do that. It didn't say Turkish out loud, but I could say to Google Now, you know, tell the condottieri that I'm just a visitor here. And it would say it in Italian.
Hello. Nice. Very nice. Yeah. Very cool. So what else is good new? Oh, a little minor change that'll help. Sharing Google Docs is now easier for people who use Google Apps for your domain, which I do. You try to share a Google Doc with like a client or someone who's outside of your domain, who doesn't have an address in your domain, it'll say, oh, this person's on the outside. And if they don't have a Google account, you can't share it. You have to use a link that anybody can see. Well, now you do not have to have a Google account in order to see.
Big.
It's a big deal. So you can share a Google Doc with someone who does not have a Google account. You can send them an email with a link, and they can view the link without having to sign into Google to see the doc, which sounds very minor, but it actually is really a big thing, especially when you're sending docs around to clients or potential customers or whatever. Google Glass update this week. XE10, new firmware, came with a couple of different updates. The biggest one is transit. If you're in one of the cities that Google Maps has transit data for, Google on Glass, it will show you not only timetables, but guidance on where to change trains, the distance to the nearest bus stop, overall estimated time of arrival, and other minor changes in XE10 for Glass. You can see links and notifications. You can open up a site. If you get a link and a notification, you can see profile pictures and a background or a message or a comment card. Google's really pushing, you know, been pretty great about pushing out updates to Glass. So nice.
You know, how often do you wear yours?
Not very often. But I have to tell you, transit and directions in an urban area, like when I go back to New York, walking around the streets of New York, Glass, you know, much like Now is very helpful when you're traveling. Like, I feel like Glass in, you know, the streets of New York, the streets of San Francisco would be extremely, extremely helpful.
Not
right
the subway.
Not in the subway, right, because you're not connected. Although some subway stations are actually getting connectivity. Sorry. Last time I was in New York, I was on a train on the tracks, and there was a guy talking in the cell phone, and I was like, how is this happening? And it must have been one of those stations where, like, I guess there was AT&T service, and he was saying to the guy, I don't know how I have service down here. So I don't know how they're doing that, Jeff. They're just hooking up in certain stations or what?
Yes, they are.
I know there's Wi-Fi in certain stations. I didn't realize that there was.
And cell servers, mainly along 42nd Street.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't wear glass a whole lot. I wear it on weekends when I'm out and about, and I do wear it when I'm playing with the baby, and the baby's just starting to learn how to walk now. So that's been really fun.
Really?
So I can help her,
oh boy.
You know? Yeah. I can help her and hold both her hands and still get footage of that, which is really nice. So it still does remain like the baby dogs, puppies and kittens.
But you're seeing, I mean, as we talked about the value of Google Now, you're seeing that what really Google Now needs is a delivery mechanism that's kind of always on.
Yes.
It's a pain right now to have to, not yeah. a big pain, yeah. but it's a pain to have to look at, oh, let me see the card. Wouldn't it be great if it popped up, you go into a restaurant and it says, hey, here's how you say, you know, I want bacon and eggs in Turkish on your some sort of display. That's cool.
Right. Or your wrist, you know, wrist or.
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging. I don't know how you do it. Glass
it
is annoying. I mean, there's no perfect solution yet. It's, mm-hmm. I think, it's a brain tap.
Yeah, but you can see that Google Now is clearly the software component of this just-in-time.
Oh, yeah.
We know what you want and what you need right now. Delivery mechanism. They just have to get the hardware side down. But the software side, they're doing a great job.
Better and better and better.
Yeah.
Somebody in the chat room said, I want Google then so I can figure out where I put my keys. But it could do that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in theory, it knows more and more about you. It's kind of spooky. It's really good.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. What else do we got? Oh, Google, just a few days after shipping Chrome 30, Google debuted Chrome 31 beta with a few new features. First is web payments. So web developers will get programmatic access to the browser's autocomplete information. So when you save your credit card information or your Google Wallet account, developers can use a new function that can say, hey, you know, use this payment information in order to go through this payment flow for their apps with users' permission, of course. There's new portable native code, which gives developers the ability to execute native code in the browser, so compiled C++ code. All that means super, super fast. And application shortcuts for Android. So developers can make their websites able to put a shortcut to your desktop or your Android home screen to your their web app, which can act like a native app as well. It can get rid of the Chrome and the tabs and just show kind of a special full screen mode, which is kind of cool. And so that's all kind of developer stuff in the new Chrome. And that's Chrome 31 beta for desktop and Android. And finally, HBO shows, the oatmeal is going to be happy to hear this. HBO shows are now available in Google Play. So Game of Thrones, The Newsroom, True Blood, Boardwalk Empire, The Wire, Girls, all available. Episode pricing varies from $1.99 to $2.99. So
here's my favorite part of that. My favorite part is that The Newsroom is cheaper than the others because it deserves to be.
Yeah.
Junky.
Yeah. You get what you pay for.
Everybody who actually works in news hates The Newsroom.
I hated it too. I don't know why. I watched the first episode of this last season. I literally couldn't watch anymore.
Gina,
sounds like you like this.
It was a totally guilty pleasure of mine. I watched every episode just so that I could hate on it, just so I could be like, I mean, you know, the female characters are terrible. The dialogue was ridiculous and overblown. Yeah. Like, it was crazy. There were so many things about it that were just ridiculous, but it was like watching a circus. So I was like, okay.
Right.
You know,
right. You know what, Gina? Last season, when I went on Twitter to complain, half the people would say, yeah, funny. Other people would say, why are you complaining? I don't watch it. This season, I get zero reaction to any Newsroom tweets. Nobody's watching
it. No one's really watching. Yeah, not as many people are watching it. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not around much longer. Honestly.
No, I think it got renewed. I think HBO said we're going to do another season.
Oh,
why?
This is what happens when you don't have Homeland.
Homeland's back.
Homeland.
I haven't watched it. And don't tell me about Breaking Bad.
Oh.
I was on a boat.
With you right now.
Don't.
Oh, boy.
No, I haven't watched Breaking Bad at all.
At all?
Yeah, at all. I haven't.
Oh, guess what? It's on Google Play.
Oh, great.
It is. That's how I watched it.
Me too.
You know what, Leo? Every single episode of Breaking Bad I watched on Google Play. I binged watched to get caught up. I actually, I didn't like having to lose this savoring that I had on planes. The only episode I watched on air was the final episode, and the commercials drove me nuts. It completely cut up the tense mood of the show. Yes,
I can no longer watch TV with commercials.
God, it was such a difference.
So I, even though I could have watched it for free, I could even have watched it on demand for free, I paid for it on Play.
Yes.
And I, and the reason I use Play, and we're going to talk about this later, is because I can Chromecast it.
And I can watch it on plane.
So I can watch it anywhere. I can watch it. Yeah, Gina, exactly.
Highly recommended. Do it.
It's been one of the shows.
Start at the beginning.
It's been on my to-do list. Well, because, you know, I actually did start to watch it back when it first started airing. I think I made it through, like, the half, maybe even the whole first season.
Yeah.
But then it got bad, and I just lost interest. But then apparently it got really good again, and then the finale, I guess, was really worth it. So now that I know that the finale's worth it, I'm willing to go back and rewatch. I didn't want to be a Lost or Sopranos situation. I like a satisfying finale.
You should,
so it's
you should save it. I save shows for the old age home. Because you don't want to get there and you got nothing to do and there's nothing to watch because you've seen it all. So save a few things.
You know, we don't watch TV with the baby in the room. So basically I can only watch TV like after she's gone.
Is this a philosophical thing?
This is, you know, it's our pediatrician talked to us about it. It's an APA thing. They actually recommend that kids don't or that you discourage media use. Not that they don't watch TV, but that you discourage sort of screen time before age two. Yeah.
And honestly, what is the thinking?
Well, there have been links, you know.
So they don't grow up to be us, Leo.
There's links to obesity and ADHD and other sort of attention issues, and their brains are developing at a very rapid rate in the first 2 years, more rapidly than any other time in their life. And honestly, if the TV's not in the room, the baby just cranes her head and stares at it. So
it's filling their brain faster than any real experience possibly could. It's good for them. No, I'm not kidding. It's like the thing. Remember in the Fifth Element where she was the alien and she had to learn everything about civilization. What did she do? She watched TV. She watched it fast forward and was able in 3 days to learn to speak English and know exactly everything about culture. You're depriving your child of a fundamental educational opportunity.
When she's two, we will start with the fundamental education.
I didn't let my kids watch TV either, and look what happened.
Oh, you did? Okay. She does screen time.
I watch TV, and look what I turned into, a TV
critic. Yeah, a TV reviewer. I don't, you know, I wouldn't watch Breaking Bad with Etta in the room.
Oh, God, no.
Exactly. Well, there's that, too. The stuff that we
watch. Mommy, I want some of that blue meth. How do I get that?
Not age appropriate.
You know what, Gina, she's going to get back at you because you're going to get Barneyed to death.
I'm not looking forward to that. I gotta tell you, I'm not looking forward to opening up the Baby Einstein DVDs. Like, I'm just like, you know, Sesame Street, I am looking forward to. Pixar movies, very much looking forward to.
It's not in your control, Gina.
I would hate to experiment with my child's mushy little brain in any way. So I understand that. But at the same time, I don't think there's real science behind any of this. No. I think it's somebody's good idea. Like, it's probably not good for them to watch TV. I don't think there's any science. Who's going to test 1 year olds? Let's take a control group and let them watch TV all they want, and another group and let them not watch, and let's see how they turn out in 20. Nobody's done that.
Right. So, no, you're probably absolutely right. It's not an absolute at all. And
it's just somebody's good idea. But I'm not recommending experimenting with your children either. You should just do what your gut says.
I mean, at this point, we just want her to spend time picking up things and get, you know, building her fine motor skills and working on, you know, crawling and walking rather than kind of sitting back. I know she would just be mesmerized by the screen.
I think it's moral panic. More moral panic, myself.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is.
It could be. Yeah.
But Gina, I guess this is the thing that strikes me wacky. When my good friend at the time, Peter Travers, who's now at Rolling Stone, we were people together, and he had a wonderful son named Alex. And it was when, you know, gigantic video cameras were out. And I thought, wow, this is really going to skew this kid's brain because he sees himself on the TV set.
Right.
Right.
No, it didn't. It's just video. What's the big deal? It's video. It's video.
Right.
Humans have an amazing ability to adapt to whatever crap is fed to them.
Does Anna see herself on TV?
I mean, the one thing I do is I play videos of her that I've taken of her, like, on my phone. So she loves my phone. She like, looks, you know.
Oh,
like,
Gina,
you know,
you've blown it already. Oh, my God.
I know. We obviously video conference with grandma a few times a week. She also loves looking in the mirror. I mean, that's the thing that babies do. They don't realize that it's like another kid there. You know, right. They don't realize it's themselves right away. So she laughs at herself in the mirror. She likes to watch videos of herself on my phone. And we do video conferencing with grandma a few times a week. So it's not like she's not in front of a screen. We just try to keep the...
So she's going to think the TV is nothing but grandma's. Yeah.
Grandma's and her.
It's true.
Why is the TV not talking back to me and saying it loves me?
Why am I not on TV?
Right. She's going to want to know why grandma isn't singing to her on TV constantly and reacting to her. It's true. That's all I got for Cheap Talk.
And that, my friends, is the Google Change Log. When are you going to give Etta a smartphone?
Oh, man, that's a really good question. We're thankfully pretty far out from that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
It's 5 years out at least.
She's already kind of fixated on my phone because it's constantly in my hands and I'm constantly looking at it. So she wants to know, you know, kind of and then she tries to put it in her mouth. So I don't know. We're going to see. I like to think that it's going to be later on, but I think it's probably going to be earlier.
That was in Europe. In Europe, because of the tariffs being different for phone service, that you can, it costs nothing to receive calls. I knew tons of Europeans who early on gave their 5-year-olds phones.
Why not?
Tons.
Why not? You can reach them. If they get lost, they can call home.
But then schools in the U.S. forbid it.
They can generate bitcoins for their college education.
Yeah.
It's a useful thing. Anyway, I don't know. Let's take a break. Thank you for the change log. I feel up to date now. Thank you. We're going to talk about Chromecast and Kosh. How do you say it? Kosh.
Kosh.
There's a U, but the U is silent.
Yep.
Kosh. But first, a word from Shutterstock.com. If you are creating content, as I do, if you have a blog or you have a website or you do PowerPoint presentations, you got to check out Shutterstock.com, the best source for royalty-free images. They've got, let me just check. I always like to check at the bottom. 29,000. Hey, this is good. They're about to turn the clock over. They're almost up to 30 million royalty-free. By the time you hear this, because they're adding, they just added 180,000 new stock images this week. So if my calculations are correct, within the next couple of days, they're going to cross 30 million royalty-free stock images. And now you might say, well, that's too many, but they've got the best search ever. Fabulous search tool that lets you search not only for a thing, but also for adjectives. You could search for a hippo or a cranky hippo. You could search for a blue hippo. Really a great way to kind of collect images, to get some inspiration, to illustrate. They also have video. If you click the footage tab at the top of Shutterstock.com, you'll see their great video footage. Really high quality stuff. You can see I have a subscription, which I really like. I get 25 images a day, which is very useful for, creating content for, we use it for the whole company. So here's the deal. I want you to check it out. It's free to create an account, and that's the first thing you should do. Just go. You don't need to give them a credit card or anything. Just go create an account, because then you can start using the light boxes to save images and ideas, use it for inspiration, share it with colleagues. They've got a great iPad app. If you have an iPad or an iPhone, check that out. It's just gorgeous. Shutterstock.com. They're truly international, as we are. They have more than a dozen countries, full-time customer support throughout the week, multilingual customer support in all of those images.
The cats alone make it worth it.
We have so much fun. I don't know if you've seen on the social hour what they do, what Brian does with the cats and Sarah, because Sarah has a little fetish for a feline fetish. Shutterstock.com. Once you decide to purchase, I invite you to use our special offer code TWIG1013. TWIG1013. You will get 25% off any package. That is a great deal. Shutterstock.com. Sign up for free. When you decide to buy, TWIG1013. That way we get credit and you get 25% off. Shutterstock. Thank you so much for your support. Shutterstock.com. So
I've been very excited about the Chromecast. We were just talking about the fact that Jeff and I both buy content on Google Play. One of the reasons I do is because I have Chromecasts, you know, all over. So I can go, I could start a show on my phone, on Netflix, on my phone, or on Google Play, send it to the Chromecast. I can visit somebody's house. It doesn't have to be my Chromecast, and send the video to there. The quality is great. I really like it. But it's still Netflix, Hulu, I guess is the recent edition, right? And Google stuff, and that's all. And now it's starting to turn out that maybe Google is slow playing this. What's going on? Apparently a lot of companies want to support Chromecast, but Google is not saying go ahead and do it.
That's weird.
Yeah, why? So the article that I saw implied that Google is trying to kiss up to the big media companies. This would not be the first time Google's done such a thing. They certainly do that with YouTube. But that they're not supporting... this is from Read Write Web. What's holding up Chromecast apps? Nothing but Google, Adriana Lee writing. She talks about Koch. Now, Koch, in fact, she even mentions Koch had lunch, went to have lunch with the engineers there, and came back and saying, you know, even though they broke my app, the Allcast app, by updating the API, I don't blame them. Koch said, I really think they believe in having an open platform. But Google has to whitelist an app before it will work on Chromecast, and they haven't. Hulu Plus is the only one they've added.
Have you tried to do the Twit stuff? Was it API?
Well, couldn't it's not me. So this is the interesting thing. It's a simple thing to add, apparently.
Right.
The code's not complicated. We don't develop any of our Twit stuff in-house, so right. I don't have anything to do with it. But Houdini7, Craig Mullaney, who does one of our apps, says he was going to add it, but they've got to approve it.
Oh, and they're not doing it. That's weird.
And there's just nothing coming out. In this article, she speaks specifically with the folks at Play On. They have an app called Playcast. They want to be able to stream a hidden web browser window on the computer over to a Chromecast-connected TV. It's just like Chromecast's tabcasting, basically. They developed the app in a month and a half, and it's ready, but Google has not yet approved it. Bitkasa, which is an online backup and storage service. This might be one. I can understand maybe Google slow playing this one. They want you to be able to store your videos on Bitkasa and then play it directly back onto the Chromecast. But Google has yet to say yes. So I hope that Google isn't just kind of kissing the butts of the big companies like Clear Channel, like Pandora, like Revision 3, the Washington Post. I hope that they are open and they want to. Google says it wants to support all types of apps, including those for local content. But and apparently there's, you know, they've given a very solid API out and an SDK.
There's something else going on here.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
This is not one of those cases. I hope this is not. Where, you know, when Google gets in trouble is when it prioritizes a corporate deal over the user, right? Verizon.
Right. Don't do that.
Don't get me started. In fact, you will get me started soon on Verizon. All that time you were gone, Leo, nothing's happened. Nothing. But we'll get back to that. Right. And so that in China, when they do corporate deals, when they try to suck up to the big guys, that's when they do the wrong thing. I hope that's not the case. There's some other feature coming or something coming that's just going to make it better, and they're holding off.
I still think the Chromecast is great. I mean, it's $35. It's not like I can really complain. It's worth $35 just for what it does now.
I saw it for sale in my Best Buy recently, so they're getting the stock back.
Yeah, but I really think that it could be so much better. I mean, if all of the apps on my phone were Chromecast-enabled, I'd be so happy.
Jesus.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you use it, Gina? Do you have a Chromecast?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I've been mostly watching Netflix on it, which doesn't, you know, I mean, you can watch Netflix on pretty much anything. But yeah, I love it. I was just at a family party. We were Chromecasting my Flickr album of the baby up on the TV. Yeah, it's a great device.
You can even bring the pop the Chromecast in your pocket, bring it, and go set it up over there. You know, if you want.
Yeah,
to.
Or a hotel.
Or a, yeah, they, well, they, you have to be hotel. Able to.
Yeah, well, you use your own MiFi or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you, yeah, well, that's the way to do it. Bring a MiFi to Chromecast. Yeah,
Chad, go to the three shot. What the cats? It's the second cat I've seen.
Oh, okay. So this is something I learned. Hi, Kitty. This is something I learned in Turkey and Greece. Unlike here in the U.S., where they round up feral cats and they, I don't know what they put them in, they put them away. It's apparently just there's cats everywhere in Turkey and Greece. So I've decided to increase the cat population of the Brick House Studios. And, yeah.
What does your dog think about this?
Oh, he doesn't know. He thinks he's a cat. He's the same size.
They look like there were little animations going by.
No.
Yes.
Oh,
that's the other one. There's the other one.
Yeah. There's about 12 of them.
No, you're not serious.
Wait a minute. That was a trick. How did you do that? You walked right into the TV set.
Yeah, okay. So all right. So what's going on?
I don't know. It's just a cat. He's itching.
Is this like some game? Is this Chad?
He did it again.
I thought it was
Shutterstock.
What's going on?
It's Shutterstock. That's stock footage. That's stock footage. So some of the Shutterstock stock footage has alpha channel so that we can key it in on the and we can put it anywhere. You could put a cat right here on my desk if you wanted to.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. So see that black is keyable. So we can put that cat anywhere. And apparently
Chad
has figured out the magic.
And of course Chad would do cats, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would. But it is interesting. It is something I noted that all the ruins have cats everywhere. Lots of cats. And you can't pet them because they're feral. You don't want to. They're not kitty cats.
You don't want to mess with them.
You don't want to mess with them.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
There are no rats, however. And that's
suckered.
That's a good sign.
Oh, that's a good point.
Actually, Lisa in our new house has decided that she's going to feed every feral cat who comes to the door. She wants to have, because we have 3 acres, she wants to make sure there are no rodents.
I think you're going to find programmers show up too.
Yeah, we'll feed any programmer. So,
grow house snacks.
So you mentioned the Google, right. You mentioned the Google Wallet and the change log. As of right now, the Nexus 4 is right, the only phone. And like, I can't get it to work on anything.
Oh, Google Wallet.
Yeah.
Well, that's a problem of carriers in great extent. That's another Verizon.
So don't blame Google for that one.
I think it's the carriers.
So Google Wallet is working on phones without NFC now. It's even working on iOS, which doesn't have NFC. I mean, you don't have the tap to pay, but you can send money.
No, you can't even install it. Wait a minute. Let me look. So I'm going to search for Google Wallet.
I think it works on T-Mobile and on open phones, but I don't think it necessarily works on like Verizon phones and AT&T phones. I think. That's only because people were ranting about it in my Verizon rants.
What's going on with my website? Is this it? Oh, here's Wallet. So this is the nice thing about Play, is the Play Store, is I can see immediately which phones I can install.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on with my computer? Are you doing something, Chad?
I swear I'm not. This may be something that happened when you were gone, Leo, but they removed the support for NFC, so you can use Wallet without NFC.
So now it will install on my other phones? Oh.
Yes.
But all my phones had NFC all along. That's not it.
Well, and so with that, they removed a lot of the carriers didn't like it because, like, Verizon has their own payment system that they don't want to put on Verizon didn't want Google Wallet to actually play.
Okay, so I can't install it on a one. You don't have it on your one, do you?
I do. I just installed it on my one.
Oh, they must have changed something.
Or update it.
Is your one on Verizon?
So, Chad, are you saying it will now work on Verizon phones because T-Mobile. It doesn't have to hook into NFC?
I'm actually not 100% sure if this will work on all carriers, but I know that because of the NFC they've removed that it's now
I can
on
now
almost
install
any phone.
It on my Moto X. I couldn't do it before. So this is good.
You can send money. You can store loyalty card information. You can't do the tap to pay.
Yes.
But
I don't care about that. I wasn't able to use it at all. It wasn't installed on a lot of my phones. So they've changed that.
They've changed that. And that's fairly recent.
Since I've been gone.
Yeah.
I just installed it on the Moto X. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
There's another story that they're moving staff over to Wallet. They're going to try to make some push into Wallet.
Well, that's why I bring it up. Time. Yeah.
Amazon has also started a pay with Amazon feature going out. So there's a war
going on. You know, I've just been doing some development on something I'll have more information about soon. Ooh, not today, but I've been doing some, you know, I was in a position where I had to choose a payment vendor for a thing. And you know, I looked at, you know, we looked at Stripe and we looked at Amazon Payments and looked at Google Wallet and we looked at PayPal. And we actually wound up going with Amazon Payments.
Oh, really?
Partially because it sort of fulfilled that we had sort of special requirements. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, it's not that easy for develop. Like, there's a lot that could be done still. Like, these systems could be a lot easier to implement. Stripe is really great. I just didn't like with Stripe, you know, you have to enter your credit card like on the spot. And I like the idea of signing into a trusted vendor. I'm not a big fan of PayPal. So, you know, Amazon is like, a lot of people, you know, our intended audience have Amazon accounts. They've saved their credit cards. You know, you can do that kind of instant pay here. You don't have to get up from your machine and find your credit card or, you know, if you save your credit card details. So that made sense for us. But I think that there's a lot here that Google could do.
This is huge. This is all new and different since I've been gone. This has all happened. So I was not able to install it before. I am able to install it. I can add credit cards to it. I can, as you say, send money, save offers and loyalty programs. It's got all my recent transactions on here. This is great. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, finally, I've been waiting for Wallet to take off.
Yeah.
So I can send you money directly.
Now, the problem with Wallet, from my perspective as a developer, I just don't think a lot of people have Wallet accounts.
Right.
Not as many people have Wallet accounts as have Amazon accounts or have iTunes accounts.
Yes.
So as a developer, you want to choose the most friction-free path toward getting money, right? So you're still, Google's not there yet, but this is a good start. I mean, right now, when do you create your Wallet account? When you want to purchase something from the Play Store. Google's getting better with that. People are purchasing apps and media. But I don't, you know, you don't think Google when you want to send somebody money, right? Oh. When I want to send somebody money, I think, well, Chase Amazon supports that now, which is one of my banks. PayPal, even though PayPal makes me feel kind of icky, it actually does work. A lot of people have PayPal accounts, really thanks to eBay, right? But you still don't feel great about that. There's still not like a great, obvious, easy solution. So Google has to be in a position where everybody has a Wallet account. You know, developers have to feel like, oh, everybody's got a Wallet account.
How could Google, because Google has the market power to oomph something, what could they give that would make people all of a sudden sign up for Wallet?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they tried those promotions where it was like, hey, you can get these movies for 10 cents. All you have to do is create a Wallet account and pay the 10 cents, right? Like, I think that the push, like little incremental promotional pushes like that. I mean, what Google has to do is they have to sell something in the Play Store that's so compelling that everyone must have one. The Chromecast is a good example, you know, and they have to, you know, they create a Wallet account kind of in the process. And I think just in general, like, Google's not the company that you go to for monetary transactions, right? I mean, you go there for Gmail and you go there for search and maps, right? But I think part of it is just a perception issue. You know, I go to Amazon, I've been buying stuff on Amazon for decades. I trust them. Like, it's a perception issue.
This is from NotMe613 in the chat room, makes a very good point. Retailers are afraid of Amazon. They're not going to support Amazon payments because that's just giving Amazon.
That's true. Business. And that's why PayPal, which is the friend of stores,
right,
is really making a push to get into more and more stores.
And Google could be in that position. I don't know. Do people trust PayPal? I mean, the reputation PayPal has generated over the last few years has not been good.
Not been good.
I think that's among geeks.
Nerds, only geeks,
but I think so. But you know, Google's a big, you know, it's going to be a fascinating battle, and it's a marketing push. I mean, get half off your Starbucks coffee. Somebody's going to do that.
Google's historically terrible at that, though, aren't they?
Yes. Well, they're not a marketer.
They're a terrible marketer.
True.
So I don't, you know, I would rather use Wallet or maybe Apple Passbook. Well, the problem with that is you have to have an iPhone. But I would rather use that than anything that you've just mentioned, including Amazon, although I do pay.
Remember back to the day my friend Upender Chardonnay started Firefly out of MIT Media Lab, and it got bought because it had Passport in it.
Oh.
Which was Microsoft.
Right.
Microsoft, way back when, thought it could be this.
Single sign-on.
Microsoft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Microsoft couldn't do it. All right, let's talk about the Nexus 5. We've been putting it off, putting it off, putting it off. Is there going to be a Nexus 5? Is it going to be, as some have said, this month in like a week, 2 weeks?
We don't know. We don't know for sure. The
no,
last rumor
nothing,
about,
nothing.
Yeah, I mean, the last rumor I heard about date was October 15th. That's like this coming Monday, right? But the thing is, if they're going to ship this thing before the holidays, it's got to happen in the next couple of weeks, right? Because then you start to run into you know, Thanksgiving, and you know they got to have it out before the holidays. So that was a couple of weeks ago in All About Android. They were talking about October 14th, 15th.
Right.
Now, we have the iPad announcement that's supposed to happen like the 22nd.
We know that for sure.
Shipping.
We know that for sure. All Things D is pretty well connected. They say for sure October 22nd that will be. We don't know what it'll announce, but the suspicion is a new iPad, both the big version and the mini, as well as a new Mac Pro. We know that, you know, they're going to announce that. But they've already done the iPhone.
Yeah.
I'd love to see a Nexus 5.
Yeah, next couple weeks, I would say, probably.
One of the reports said that it was going to, just like the Nexus 7, allegedly, we'll get to that in a minute, is supposed to work on across CDMA and GSM.
That's good. That's for sure the next big thing, because CDMA is moving to LTE. And so all you have to do is support LTE. And that means everybody.
Well, the problem is, though, you don't have the ratchet down to 3G if you don't have 4G coverage.
Right. But that's okay.
But Verizon still hasn't done Jacko. And with government shutdown, there's no FCC to go after him. Do you mind, Leo, going down to, if I may do a dramatic
reading? That's a good point,
here?
Actually. Will that hold up the Nexus 5 because the FCC can't do anything? They can't approve.
Very good point. They can't approve anything. You can't get. I just had a new fellow arrive at my school, and she can't open a bank account because she can't get a Social Security number.
Oh,
all kinds of things like that. So do me a favor, if you would, and go to the under other. There's another guy named Jarvis, no relation. Tim Jarvis went to on Twitter, went to VCW support. And said, if I may do a dramatic reading here, Android 4.4 is coming by the end of October. Will my Galaxy Nexus get 4.3 by then? Verizon responds, let's keep your phone running smooth. I don't have any info. Visit this address for updates. Are you having issues? Tim comes back and says, yes, I have an issue. My Nexus software is out of date and needs an update to 4.3. Verizon responds, like a pillow, we are here to support you. Are you able to make and receive calls? Is the internet/web working properly?
This is not a human that he's talking to.
It's got
to
be a bot. It's got to be a bot. Tim Jarvis responds, yes, the phone works properly. However, it is a Nexus device and should have the latest version of Android, which it does not. Verizon responds, woohoo! Thanks for keeping us posted. I'm glad to see that your device is working properly. You rock!
Oh, my God!
To which Tim Jarvis finally says, woohoo! You ignorant goose penis. My Nexus is still in need of an update to 4.3 and soon will need 4.4, but no, VZW sucks. Isn't that the greatest?
Ignorant goose penis might be my new favorite put down.
You goose penis. I don't even know if gooses have that.
Well, how would there be ganders and
little
gooses?
You know, not all animals have, never mind.
Well, that's true. It sounds like the Howard Stern show.
Actually, it's a very interesting question.
It is.
Okay, Google now.
Oh, boy.
What animals don't have penises?
And this is the part where Twig turns into the Howard Stern show.
You're welcome, Gina.
You're right. Seven animals with the weirdest genitalia on Earth.
Okay, Google now. Do geese have penises?
You can't do that. You're on a Nexus. Wow.
What do you mean?
Wow. Anyway.
I just hit the button.
Oh, you had to hit a button. I see. I didn't have to do anything.
Oh, poor me.
Leo didn't even have to touch it.
By the way, I took the Moto X with me the whole time. Excellent choice for traveling because it's light and small. It was very effective. Battery life was good. It was a perfect phone for traveling about hither and thither. They did update it about a week ago with apparently new camera firmware, among other things, and I didn't notice much of an improvement. I also have, and if I'd had it, I would have brought it, the new iPhone 5S, because this camera, I have to say, is a great camera on the 5S.
iPhones have great cameras. They always have. Best yeah, how you liking? So what are you doing now? Are you double fisting the iPhone?
I don't know, because then I also have...
Oh, boy.
The Galaxy Note 3, which just came in with its...
And you liked your Note 2 in the day.
I had a Note 1 and a 2. But, you know, it's funny, after using the Moto X, this thing feels so big. It's a gorgeous screen.
Well, so is the Nexus 5 going to.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. How big is the Nexus 5? Did they say 5 inches?
4.8, I think.
4.8. That's not that big. The HTC One is, 4.7, so... But this is a very high-resolution screen. It really is a gorgeous. Wow. Am I interested in Justin Donnelly's commute? I don't know why it's even asking me that. No. Apparently, Justin Donnelly has now allowed me to look at his commute. I guess he's somebody I circled. I think the screen is gorgeous. It has this bizarre stitched pleather back.
It is weird.
And it also, and I'm not sure what the story is, it does not use... micro USB. It uses some odd connector.
So that's a big mistake.
It looks like USB 3.
It is USB 3, but you can still use micro USB with USB 3.
Where do you plug it?
Okay. It's on the left side. You just plug it in.
Oh, I see. You just plug it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that I think is going to happen, the European Union is really getting serious about all phones have to have micro USB.
Oh, what's Apple going to do?
Well, right now they ship an adapter. I don't know. Anyway, big iPhone 5S fingerprint reader works. Don't know if that's enough to make it compelling. I have to say, going after using Android for so long, going back to configure a brand new iPhone just felt a little painful. It's like, I got to do that. That's not Apple's fault. Google stuff works best with Google, right? So you enter the Google account once, for instance, on an Android phone, and every Google app now knows, that's you. On an iPhone, you have to go log in about 100
times. Which is
my
problem.
Huh?
I keep buying things in play with the wrong account because I set it up under one account, not the other account. Don't get me started.
Oh, that's confusing. But you can have that problem on iOS as well. Different iCloud account. It's very confusing. Yeah, for a while I was getting my son's photo stream. That was enlightening from his freshman year in college. Not so bad. I was more worried about him getting my photo stream, actually. my eyes! So what's your problem with Verizon? You have a What is your problem?
Oh, you dare forget. I have my nice, wonderful Nexus 7.
Uh-huh.
And announced in July. I've had it now for, 5 weeks?
And it's an LTE-based.
It is an LTE-based, and Verizon still will not connect.
Oh, yeah, because it's not.
They're allegedly open network. They're supposedly certifying BS Verizon. Yeah. There's no such thing on an open network. It's a lie. I filed the complaint with the FCC. Verizon responded. I filed back. But now the FCC is out of business.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right. I remember the story now. As long as you remember.
I do.
And I want to get you started. So let's do we're going to do a new segment, the Jeff Jarvis rant segment. You've got some things. There's a bill, for instance, afoot in Israel. That would require Google to pay 7% of its Israeli revenues to websites.
Meshuga.
So, unfortunately, the full text is available for some. It's behind a paywall, of course. So I don't know what the rest of this.
Close that and read it.
No, there's a paywall.
The full text cuts up a little bit. Oh, I got the weird. I got it before.
Yeah, no, I have a paywall. So since you read it, websites?
It's just content sites wanting to it's the same as the Germans and the French, which we'll get to in a second, and others just thinking, Google has money and we don't, and that's not fair. So they should give us some of our money.
Because Google wouldn't exist if they weren't free riding on the back of these websites.
And they wouldn't exist on the internet without Google.
Well, it's a mutually beneficial relationship.
You bet it is.
And then, if that's not enough to get your blood pressure up, Jeff, I'm trying to kill him. French minister pushes Google tax to bridge telco's funding shortfall.
Mad!
The top five...
And then
the top five U.S.-based internet companies are stifling European innovation, says a French minister.
We're going to tax them like crazy to take money that's not going to actually cause people to really compete and really innovate and really create things. We're just going to give them a French dole.
Her name, I like it. The French minister for the digital economy's name is Fleur Pellerin.
Well, and also she's the minister for the digital economy. And she's trying to punish digital companies.
Right. She says, Europe is being relegated to second league in the digital economy. We are second league. So they want to tax the largest U.S. over-the-top internet providers, including Google, for reasons that make no sense.
I don't think we ever did a follow-up on the Get the Reggae Ready Leistungsschutzrecht.
Is there more?
Well, there was, because what happened was it got instituted, and then every single media company had to surrender and sign on for Google links.
Right.
So
because they weren't getting any traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope the Nexus 5 comes out because I don't have enough phones. And I want
I can tell you this, too. I'm not putting it on at Verizon. Verizon's not putting it on Verizon.
No, I don't. I think you're crazy to buy a locked phone of any kind. You should, especially since you travel, you should buy an unlocked GSM phone and put a T-Mobile SIM in it.
T-Mobile, yeah.
And then when you get somewhere, buy a SIM there. I don't know why anybody would buy a locked CDMA phone. Doesn't make sense to me. Did you read the, so Nick Bilton's book about Twitter is about to come out. Boy, I can't wait to read this. There's an excerpt in the New York Times talking about the founding of Twitter.
In a playground. The lead of it is in the playground, which is kind of nice.
But it also talks about the revisionist story of the founding of Twitter, in which Jack Dorsey basically tries to completely eliminate the role of Noah Glass, who even in this book came up with the word Twitter, the name Twitter. He was one of the founders of Odeo, which was the parent company, along with Evan Williams, that eventually came up with Twitter. Odeo was a podcast company.
Right.
And I just want to underscore this. Twit existed before Odeo existed, long before Twitter existed. We had a trademark on the name Twit. Almost certainly Noah Glass, who's created a company to distribute podcasts, had heard of Twit, which was the number one podcast at the time. And yet he says, I was looking through a dictionary for words. In fact, I have to thank Nick Bilton, because when he did it, Nick listed the T. So apparently Noah had a dictionary going through looking for names for Twitter. Let's see if I can find this.
Oh, did Bilton mention Twit?
Well, he didn't mention Twit exactly, but he went through the list of T words, and Twit was one of them that they were considering. I once asked Evan Williams, didn't you think that that might impinge? Here it is. Soon the question of a name came up. Williams jokingly suggested calling the project Friend Stalker, which was ruled out as too creepy. Although it is one of the ways people use it. Glass became obsessive, flipping through a physical dictionary, almost word by word, looking for the right name. One late afternoon, alone in his apartment, he reached over to his cell phone and turned it to silent, which caused it to vibrate. He quickly considered the name Vibrate, which he nixed, but it led him to the word Twitch. He dismissed that too, but he continued through the TW section of the Direct Dictionary. Twist, twit, twitch, twitcher, twitchy, and then there it was. He read the definition aloud. The light chirping sound made by certain birds. This is it, he thought. Agitation or excitement. Flutter. Twitter.
No, the URL was available.
Well, it didn't have any vowels originally, right? It was TWTTR.
That's right. It wasn't available. That's right.
All right. Apparently Dorsey worked hard to get Glass's name completely out of the founding legend.
How much stock does Glass have, I wonder?
Yeah, that's a good question. All these guys making a lot of money.
Ev has the lion's share.
Ev will be a billionaire.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, deserved. I respect, I don't know Ev, and I'm maybe you guys do, but I'm sure you've spoken to him. I've never even.
I know Ev.
I've had a couple of interviews.
I know Ev.
What I like about it is when Odeo went under, he gave the investors money back.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, that's pretty respectable.
I had amazing conversations. Nick Denton came to me. Nick Denton's the guy who showed me Blogger. It's all his fault. And I said, what's the big deal? And then when Blogger was about to fold one of many times, he got me to get my bosses, the Newhouses, to invest. To save it one of many times. And I had amazing meetings with Ev at the time. You know, some of the great meetings I love is watching, I watched Mark Zuckerberg do the same thing, where they kind of don't know how this, some of this business, strange business stuff works. They've got a great idea, they don't know what's what, and they're kind of scratching their heads, and then you see them turn into amazing business people. But yeah, Ev kept this company, you know, it was very controversial because all the staff left and everything else. He kept the thing operating in his kitchen, but he believed in it and he kept it alive. And I respect the heck out of that.
Yeah.
And sold it to Google and stayed at Google as long as he had to, and then changed the world again with Twitter. And then, I can't wait to read Nick's book to see what the real story is of the various backstabbings there.
Oh, it's great. It's a soap opera.
I think not just the founders and the executives, but also the board, I think, is probably.
Yes. They talk about the uncomfortable conversation where they moved Ev upstairs.
Yeah.
Fascinating stories. Nick Bilton's book will be called Hatching Twitter, A True Story of Money, Power, Friendship, and Betrayal. It comes out next month. We will absolutely talk to him about it. It should be very interesting. Dorsey will make $400 to $500 million when Twitter goes public. Ev will make well over $1 billion when Twitter goes public. What do you make of this whole frou-frou? Now, Anil Dash is involved, so I know, and of course, you work with Anil at ThinkUp, over the lack of women on the board and in the upper management of Twitter. Do you think this is an issue, Gina?
Oh, it's always an issue for me. I mean, yeah. I mean, the lack of women in any kind of in positions of power in general are always sort of is always an issue of interest to me. I know that there's been a little flutter recently, right? So there's no women. What's the story? There's no women on the Twitter board, and Dick was right. Sort of quoted as saying that it's a big problem they have to work on, right?
His initial reaction was kind of a jokey reaction, comparing the guy who's complaining to Carrot Top. But then in a subsequent tweet, he said, hey, look, this is on my mind all the time. We're looking. Although the New York Times published a great piece, Claire Kane Miller, who wrote the original piece about this, then published a follow-up piece with 45 women who would be perfectly well qualified to be on Twitter's board. So he can't be looking that hard. Maybe
there's even a BuzzFeed list.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not a very good list, I might add. It includes Oprah.
No, this isn't the BuzzFeed list. It's a good list.
It's these conversations are always that there's a supply problem, right? This is what these guys always say. There's a supply problem. There aren't enough.
It's clearly not the case.
There aren't enough women executives. From my perspective, you know, that's not the case. But my perspective is someone who thinks about this, who lives this. I mean, the fact is that you know, and I think that this is natural. Human nature. You surround yourself with people who are like you, and it's a problem. It's definitely a problem right. In the Valley. I think that if Twitter had been thinking really hard about it sooner, they wouldn't be having this conversation right now. Do I think that they're like any more sexist than any other company in the Valley? No. I mean, I think this is the status quo right now. I do think that it needs to change, and it's changing, slowly. I mean, even over the past 3 years, we've seen some changes, but no, I definitely think it is an issue. Look, anytime I go to any executive page on a company website or a conference speaker page, I immediately notice, because these are sort of just the glasses that I look through, because this is an issue that's close to my heart. I notice what the ratio of men to women is, and I notice the ratio of white to brown skin people as well.
That's another point. It's all white men.
Yeah, and I notice age as well. If it's always, if it's all young people, that makes me nervous. If it's all older people, that also makes me nervous. So,
of 10 on Google's board are women.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not terrible.
I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, I don't know if you. I mean, it's not these are private companies. It's not like. I mean, I agree, and believe me, my company's run by women, so I'm not. But
yeah, Yeah, I mean, it's a values expression. I mean, Leo, you clearly care about this because you just look at the makeup of your hosts and your management, your leadership. This is clearly something. I mean, if you're not thinking about it explicitly, you're at least the kind of person who surrounds himself by people who are different than him, right? And I mean, that's the reason why I'm here. And this is the other thing that hiring women makes it easier to hire more, you know, more women. Yes, hiring people of color makes it easier to hire more people of color, right? Because you know, people notice these things. As my rant. That's my rant.
2 of 8 on Facebook are women.
But I hate to do it by quota. Like, oh, well, we got to.
No, I think. But the point is, it's not hard. You can do it. And I, by the way, I nominate Susan Crawford to any board.
Yeah.
Just put her on it.
And the number, by the way, not 45, but 25, Claire Kane Miller's list of 25 women who would be appropriate to be on Twitter's board. Many of them are on boards of other very big companies.
Yeah, I think that the supply argument has some legs if you're trying to talk about large numbers, right? You have 100 speakers at a conference, and if you only have one woman, that's bad. But to try to argue that you're going to get 70, that's maybe hard. Okay, I will grant that. Or a whole staff, it's harder. This has been an issue in journalism for years. Trying to get people of color into newsrooms is very difficult,
right?
Just because of the numbers that are there. All right, so there is at the gross level, there's a supply problem. But if you're filling a board, then just not thinking of this going in. I mean, the other thing that's argued too. Is not just diversity of gender and race. It's also a perspective. You get companies like Google, you know, having someone from India on that board is important because having international perspectives on these boards are important. Twitter is primarily an international company. So that's an issue too.
Yeah.
You've got, and Gina's right. It's enlightened self-interest to connect yourselves to other networks of people. And the board is one way to do that.
So they should be doing it. Yeah. I gotta say, I didn't think, oh, I need to have a woman running the company. I do think about the representation on air because I want to make sure that girls don't think that this is a male, that technology is just for men. Yeah. So I do think about that a little bit in terms of hosts.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't choose Lisa as a CEO because she was a woman. I chose her because she was the right candidate. She was the best person for the job.
Wanted the job. I mean, she asked for the job. I mean, not asked, but she put herself on the, and I hope I'm not revealing anything, right? But she made herself a candidate, which is something that women need to do more of.
Well, that's something Lisa's very good at. She does not standoffish. Isn't this what Sheryl Sandberg talks a little bit about too? She is just like a guy in that respect. She says, no, I'm the right person.
Yeah, how about me?
Because we actually went to her and said, could you have anybody you could recommend to be our CFO?
she said, me.
And the truth is, I said, really? You would consider that? And she said, yeah. I said, you're hired. Because she was the right person. Right, but I do, and then we do try to get on air, you know, and Chad will vouch for this. A lot of times the Twit panel on Sundays is all men. And I say, can't we get any women? I'd also say, can't we get any people of color? That's actually harder than women.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, in this, I'm sure. I'm sure in our industry, that's true.
So, but I also hate, it's funny, I hate to say, oh, you've got to have women.
Yeah.
No, it's not quota think properly. It's again, I'll say it one more time. It's enlightened self-interest. It's saying that I'm going to, as Gina said, well, you're going to tie yourself into various networks of people, have different perspectives. Right. That's what you want to see illustrated.
Yes, because it's good business.
Yeah, and it's not about trying to hit a number.
It's good business. Let's take a break. I want to get our tip, our tool, our number of the week. I guess my tool, I'm going to talk a little bit about this Galaxy Gear. I haven't really done a lot with it, but I can tell you a little bit about my initial.
It looks so fashionable on you, Leo.
It actually looks good, I think.
It looks pretty nice. It looks really nice. Oh, it's on.
It's got a
beautiful OLED screen. Keyboard. Huh?
All it needs is one of those tiny keyboards and a pocket protector.
I don't know. I think it's better than that. But I don't think... I don't know. We'll talk about it.
All right, we'll talk.
Let me talk first about another new advertiser. I am so happy to have Personal Capital on. We interviewed the founder of Personal Capital, former PayPal guy, a really smart guy, talking about... This is the new thing. You know, for years I used Quicken and I balanced my checkbooks and I did it all in my head, you know, and I got a stock online stock account. And this is the next generation in beyond even, you know, budgeting and managing your checkbook. This is in managing your financial life, personal capital. The problem, of course, is that you're so busy making a living that you often don't have time to manage the living you're making. You've got accounts everywhere, checking, savings. Nowadays, this is so true. Retirement, credit. And you got to keep track of all this by seeing it as a unified whole. And that's what this has done. This is really interesting. It combines all your financial accounts, personal capital. You can visit at personalcapital.com to find out more. Combines all your financial accounts, gives you a total real-time snapshot of all your finances, graphs, charts, reports. I've been using it for over a year since we had the founder on the show. And it's really great. It's kind of, I guess you could say it's almost like a financial GPS. You can use it for free. PersonalCapital.com/twig is our website. Just takes a minute. You know, it's completely secure. You'll be giving it some financial information, but it's using the, you know, mainstream stuff, you know, to keep track of it. It really works really, really well. And ultimately, it is, I think, a first step into building a personal portfolio, wealth management. You can analyze the fees on your 401k, your mutual funds. You can look at your asset allocation in your portfolio and, of course, see where your money's going. Sign up now. It's absolutely free. PersonalCapital.com/twig. PersonalCapital.com/twig. Smart investing means seeing the big picture. And I think it's time to start today, whatever your level is. You know, man, I wish somebody had pulled me aside. I wish these tools were available when I was in my 20s. Somebody pulled me aside and said, you know, you really ought to be putting money in the 401k. You really ought to allocate your assets this way. We didn't have anything like this. We've got it now, and I want you to take a look at it. PersonalCapital.com/twig. It is fabu. And I can say that. I'm having used it now for more than a year. Let us get our tool and tip and number of the week, starting with everybody saying, well, aren't you going to talk about the new Google Maps? Gina Trapani.
This just got published. I think we might have even started the show or might have been in pre-show. Google Maps rolling out two new really nice features. First, this is in the Google Maps preview, the new redesigned Google Maps. Directions for multiple destinations, I guess, is one of their most requested features in the new Google Maps. So when you pop in a destination, you ask for directions. This is rolling out slowly, and I actually don't have it in my Google Maps yet. So you might not have it in yours. It's coming out next weeks or the next few days, maybe. There is a plus sign, so you can add another destination, so you can plan a multi-destination.
Oh, I love that.
Road trip or cycling trip. Yeah, really nice. What else we got here? A few other things. You can see your flight, hotel, and restaurant reservations in right in Maps. Just search for your departing airport or dining destination. It will instantly show your upcoming plans. This is a really nice
integration
with the Gmail, you know, linking your data across
products. It's kind of like TripIt. Oh, very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Very nice. And upcoming events. So if you search for something like Radio City Music Hall, for example, or local performance venues, you'll see a click on the upcoming events card. Again, we have the cards, which is Google's new design, you know, most modern sort of design language. You'll see a schedule of concerts, sports matches, and other events happening near you. So, yeah, some really nice updates there on Maps. Again, I'm not seeing this in my current Maps, but should be coming out rolling out the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I don't have it either. When they updated Maps, I was kind of disappointed because it got so stark. It did less.
Yes.
And I guess that was laying the foundation for what they're going to do, which was add to it.
I swear that Google takes away stuff just to see what they get the most complaints about and then adds that back in slowly. Yeah. I think that's how they do it.
I'd be a little worried if I use TripIt. I love TripIt. TripIt monitors my Gmail. When it sees confirmation emails, it builds an itinerary automatically for me. It's a website and an app. I used it on this most recent trip, and it's a really great way to keep track of stuff, to know when your confirmations are and stuff. But if that were built in automatically to Google Maps.
TripIt is great. And I should say that this blog post says this will be rolling out today, so we should see it today.
Oh, good.
I agree, though. I love TripIt.
Yeah.
But it just sort of makes sense that that would be a Google Now thing.
It's scary. If you're a company, that Google knows everything about everybody. It's very hard to compete in certain spaces. the information
relationships
space.
Relationships are the future of business.
Jeffrey Jarvis.
Numero,
si vous plaît.
How do you say that in Turkish? You'll find out from Google now.
Okay, Google now. How do I say number, please, in Turkish? Unfortunately, it doesn't say it out loud, which would be nice. But it does show it, which is cool. Oh, no, it doesn't.
What is it?
Okay. Oh, I think I'm supposed to say translate or something, right?
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. So, the number of URLs taken down by Google has gotten to be amazing. More than 8 pirate links, quote-unquote pirate links, every second.
Wait a minute. What do you mean taken down? Like taken out of the search results?
Yeah.
Wow.
So between in the summer of 2012, Google got 1.8 million link takedown notices a week. That's increased now to 5.3 million a week, a 4,000% increase, covering 5,400 copyright owners on 37,000 domains. All right. So the claim that Google's not doing anything about copyright is BS. Then in the same story from The Guardian, it says that a report published by the London School of Economics found that, quote, evidence does not support claims about overall revenue reduction due to individual online copyright infringement.
Right? Oh.
So it's saying that, for example, UK revenues from online music were higher than revenues for both CD and vinyl combined for the first time in 2013. Worldwide sales of recorded music increased in 2012 for the first time since 1999. The movie industry, despite claims of piracy is devastating them, found revenues hit $35 billion, making a 6% increase over 2011. And this quote, file sharers in the UK were found to spend more on content than those who only consumed legal content, demonstrating the potential boost to legal digital content sales as a result of content sampling. Notice the verb sampling, not piracy.
Yeah.
I ran an most of the day panel at a World Economic Forum event last week here in New York, and it was all about trying to understand this era and try to get to a new regime. And pretty much everybody in the room, there were a lot of showbiz companies in the room, admitted that copyright's broken, that it's not the solution, that suing people and fighting people is not the solution. I fought against using the words copyright and intellectual property even in the discussion because it's a presumption to think it's property, and that's the way we look at it. So I hope that maybe we can start to head toward a saner view of what sampling and sharing and creation means. So that's it for my highfalutin number. I want to do one more thing. Get your glasses ready, folks. Get them ready. The man who created the concept of the Gutenberg parenthesis that I've talked about in the show, a guy named Pettit, who's a professor in Southern Denmark, is coming to speak at my school at CUNY on October 17th. Just Google Gutenberg parenthesis CUNY October 17th, and you'll find it. And if you're in New York, come on by.
Cool. Thomas Pettit. He's coming to town.
Coming to New York. And the Gutenberg parenthesis will have, what we should do is have scotch there like Apple meetings, and everybody can down one every time we say Gutenberg.
He's from USD, the University of Southern Denmark.
Southern Denmark.
I love it.
Not Northern Denmark.
No, Southern. No, don't be confused. There's a big difference. It's the South, kind of a rivalry, you know, going on. The Galaxy Gear is here. I'm going to review this. By the way, it only works right now with the Galaxy Note. So I have the Note 3 and the Galaxy Gear. I will review both on Tuesday on Before You Buy. But it's kind of the pairing is very interesting. So it comes with a cradle that you put the watch in to charge it. I don't yet know what the battery life is, but I suspect not very long. And the cradle also has an NFC chip on it. So in order to pair this, you could do it manually. You tap the phone on the cradle. The phone says, oh, you have a Galaxy Gear. Would you like to download the software? And you do. And it automatically sets up the Bluetooth and everything, which is kind of cool. This is the Gear Manager. And you can see the Gear is connected. The Gear, this is pretty much out of the box. By the way, great looking OLED screen. It is a touch screen, so I can swipe through, look at contacts, logs. Well, it's call logs, by the way, missed calls and so forth, so I could see, you know, who called me and who didn't call me. I can also run a variety of apps, and you install the apps from your phone, so you can see what apps are installed including S Voice, so I guess I can dictate it to it.
And that's a Samsung app store.
Yes, all of this is Samsung. This is not, you know. In fact, my almost immediate reaction to the Note 3 is, oh, this is, I can't do it because it's so Samsungized. For instance, on the Note 3, you have a swipe up, which reminds me a little bit of the swipe up on the iPhone 5 that gives me some sort of weird, I don't know if it's bad, but it's just like, this is not.
How do you get to Google now?
Well, right. It's like, and then, you know, the TouchWiz is so different, and I don't know. I probably have to customize this thing, maybe even. Anyway, the watch pairs with it. It does require the Galaxy Gear. A couple of things, when you get up and walk away from your phone, the Gear buzzes and says you've lost the Bluetooth connection. You won't lose your phone that way. You can also do it in the other direction. I could say, find my Gear. Where'd I leave my watch? Where is it? And it will find your Gear. The Gear turns itself off.
The thing, yeah, that's I look at a watch, it's always on.
Yeah, that's not how this works. It does allow you to choose watch face. I mean, look, it's not a watch, it's something else. It does allow you to choose watch faces. I'm using the weather clock, but it has other watch faces, including a pedometer clock, because there's a pedometer built into it, so you can see how your steps are going. I like the idea of being able to swipe through this. You know, it has a camera right here. I haven't really played much with that yet. I just got it, but it's, you know, media controller. I could see a gallery of images I've taken on my camera, that kind of thing. I don't know. I'm intrigued. I really was expecting something really horrific from all the reviews. I think it looks all right. It's rubber band.
It's not bad looking. I mean, that's not horrible. The biggest compliment. It's not horrible looking.
It's not horrible.
How much is it?
I don't know. I think a couple a couple hundred bucks, right?
Yeah.
And you have to have the Note, at least for now. Although they say that with the upgrade to KitKat, is it KitKat or 4.3? Is it? I can't remember. With the upgrade on the GS4 and the GS3, you should be able to use this with some of the other Samsung devices. No word yet as to whether it'll work with anything besides Samsung. My guess is not. So I'll have a full review. I mean, there's, you know, I think there's room in this marketplace. I have a Pebble
what's most
too.
Interesting is not this device per se, but what they're capable of, what they can do.
Yeah. It's just, it's early days yet. And while Glass is interesting, I mean, I would love to see Google Now here. I mean, somewhere it needs to be easier to see than pulling out the phone. $300, $299. I mean, I spent a lot more than that for a watch. It's not the most attractive watch ever. But I'll have a full review for you after I've played with this for a little bit longer. I just put it together yesterday. And yes, it has an excellent ad, so that's good. That's a good thing.
Oh yeah, that ad was good.
It was pretty cute. Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we show the Galaxy Gear ad? All right.
Everyone was saying that it was a ripoff from Apple's Hello ad, but it was only a ripoff insofar as that it was a mashup of people using a smartwatch, you know, and Apple did an ad in like 2007 and people saying hello into the phone.
This is kind of cool. Cause it's, there it is.
Your transmitter. All right.
It plays on the nostalgia.
Come in, Chief Quimby.
We've wanted to talk to our watches for years.
Yes.
What time is it?
8:29.
Thank you.
It's all right.
This is 86 reporting into
this cost a fortune in clearing rights.
You think so? Yeah. I guess they had to buy all these. Huh?
God.
Enterprise.
Oh, my
that
Lord.
That one is a lot right there.
Ka-ching, ka-ching,
Paramount.
You read me?
I read you.
This is Secret Agent Rock Slag.
Okay, partner, let's make a little spectacle of ourselves. Anything particular in mind?
The atomic punch.
There's only one man who can get us out of here in time.
I'll be down right away. I'm on my way.
We're on our way.
I'm on my way.
We're on our way.
Wow. I'm on my way.
Pretty good, huh?
Yeah. Jesus, that is an expensive ad.
Yeah. Well, Apple's iWatch is still, at least 6 months off, so.
Yeah.
Grab the turf. This is the future now.
Yeah. Well, no, there's a race going on now, right? You also have, we didn't talk about it, and it's kind of stupid, but the Samsung curved face phone, they just kind of beat LG out with it. And Samsung wants to beat Apple out with the watch.
Right.
And so that's Samsung's way now. It's just to be faster than everybody.
Well, it's good. It's good for us. Competition. We love it.
Yes.
We also love Jeff Jarvis from the City University of New York, where he teaches journalism to young people whose minds have not yet been molded by television and the internet. They've never seen a screen in their life.
No.
Otherwise, why would they be in a scribes. Journalism school?
They're scribes. Everywhere.
Ink-stained wretches all. He's also the author of a good number of fine tomes, including Public Parts, his most recent, What Would Google Do, and, of course, Gutenberg the Geek, a 99-cent Amazon
now
single.
Available in German as Gutenberg der Nerd, and on Audible as an Audible single.
Ooh. Who reads it, you?
Me.
I can't wait. I'm downloading it right now as we speak. Thank you, Mr. Jarvis. Also, thanks to Gina Trapani, smarterware.org, for filling in for me for 3 solid weeks.
Of course. So glad to have you back. Really glad to have you back.
She's also one of the hosts of All About Android, which is every Tuesday. Great show if you're into Android. You got to watch it.
Yeah, we talked about curved screens.
Curved screen. I don't know. It seems like a gimmick to me. What I don't. Maybe.
I agree.
Maybe someday we'll say, "God, these phones were so flat. How did we ever use them?"
I know that we're not going to ever say that. No. We also talked about the Fire Tube. Amazon copyrighted the term or trademarked the term Fire Tube, and the rumor is that it's a Chromecast like thing.
I want a Fire Tube on my TV.
Yeah.
Well, that puts some pressure on Google. Open up your GD platform.
Yeah, it's true.
Open it up. You know, though, what it does tell me is not going to be an Amazon streaming app on that, because that's what I was really hoping for. Because Amazon, I would buy more stuff on Amazon. Yeah. The reason I'm buying these shows on Google Play is because of Chromecast. And I'm not going to buy another device, a Fire Tube. What's that? Amazon
and
just
you run out of HDMI ports.
Yeah, too. Put it in the app. You've always done that. Kindle, it's been on every platform. You sell a Kindle, but you can still use it on an iPhone or Android phone. Let's do the same thing, shall we? I'm just saying.
Agreed. Yeah. Completely agreed. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We do this show every Wednesday at 2000 UTC on twit.tv. Please tune in and watch us live. But if you can't, we also have on-demand audio and video available after the fact. twit.tv/twig or wherever you subscribe to your podcasts. You can get every week. It's the best way to do it. That way you've got every single episode. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.